وسهلا بكل الذين ينضموا للاستماع الى راديو بلدي، اول راديو عربي امريكي ويعنى بقضايا العرب في المهجر. برامجنا في راديو بلدي كل يوم جمعه من 8 وحتى 9 صباحا مع ليلى الحسيني في بث حي ومباشر عبر WNZK Radio 690 AM. صباح الخير بلدي، صباح الخير لكل مستمعينا.
Welcome to Radio Baladi, the first Arab, Middle Eastern and American simulcast radio show. Radio Baladi is broadcast every Friday morning on WNZK 690 AM from 8 until 9 Eastern Time on Good Morning Michigan with Layla Al-Husseini. Our call-in number 248-557-3300. And now, stay tuned for the best radio talk show on Arab and American issues with your host, Layla Al-Husseini. Baladi!
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to US Arab Radio, the best ethnic radio station in North America. This is The Local Connection. My name is Khalil Hashim, editor of YahMichigan.com, the fastest growing digital business magazine in the Middle Eastern American communities in Michigan. This show is brought to you through cooperation between YahMichigan.com and US Arab Radio. The Local Connection focuses on local issues that are important to our community. And we welcome your questions and comments. The number here is 248-557-3300. It is a blessed day today. It's a Friday, and the weather today is cold. I can't believe it's spring, Mike. It's just amazing. It's still cold like that. It is expected to reach the high 40s. We have a great program for you today. We are going to be talking about mental health challenges and the opioid crisis and how it affects our community. Nearly 42,000 people died in 2016 from prescription medication, heroin, and other, overdoses. This amount is higher than any prior year. Locally, the issue is far more serious. In the city of Dearborn alone, 500 cases, the number of people related to, whether it is arrest or incidents or any other issues, that number has jumped from 500 in 2011 to more than 1,000 in 2016. This is really a serious crisis. How can we tackle these issues? How can we talk to our children about it? Are we talking about it? How can we protect our families, our children, our friends? With us today to talk about that, we're going to be starting with Nancy Berry. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, Khalil.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being with us. Nancy is president and founder of C-Assist. And could you tell us a little bit about you and about the organization that you lead?
Sure. Like I said, my name is Nancy Berry. I am the founder of C-Assist. C-Assist is a humanitarian organization. It's a nonprofit that was launched fairly about 3 to 4 years, 3 to 4 years old. And the acronym stands for Community Advocate, Support, Service, Inspire, and Teach. We are focused to serve the underserved and the uninsured. We offer an array of services between physical and mental, and our focus is primarily on mental health, along with educational programs, and we address food inequality in our community. We offer a free food program for children under the age of 18 here and in other areas in our community, in other areas that have children at risk. In a nutshell, we just address all the needs of the community, whether physical, mental, and health, food, and education, and we try to tackle every issue one at a time by offering services and educational programs.
Where are you located?
Dearborn.
Dearborn. Is it like a specific place that you operate out of?
No. We are an organization. Like I said, we are a 501c nonprofit organization. We do have an office in Fort Road and another office. However, we are, mobile. We do our services in the schools. We do our clinics that are going to be up and running again in July in different areas.
Okay. And what are we dealing with? What kind of problem do we have?
Oh, we have a lot of problems. So the mental health issue has been, like you said, initially there's over 500, doubled to 1,000 in the last 2 years. Those are only the drug-related arrests in the Dearborn area, and most of them were from the Arab American descent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We do have a crisis in drug overdose as well, and that's been on the rise and hasn't they haven't been addressed properly because of the barriers and the stigma and everything that goes along with this in the community. So this is a serious, very serious issue that needs to be addressed. Suicide, on the other hand, too, it's been on the rise as well. And again, it hasn't been talked about, it hasn't been addressed, and because of the stigma and because of the cultural barriers and because of the misconceptions and
How do we overcome that? How can we really get beyond that stigma?
Awareness and education, and somebody has to open up the dialogue and have to continue to talk about it, will eventually convince the community, convince the stakeholders that this is something that it's okay to talk about with your children, with the educators, with the imams, with anybody that's involved in that matter, anybody that gets in touch with our children or in contact in any way or another, have to be able and have to be qualified. I'm not talking about being a social worker per se, but at least have to have some sort of education and an approach to them, to the matter, that allows the person in front of them, that whom they're addressing, to be able to open up the conversation and talk and ask questions and be answered properly from the right resources. Mm-hmm.
What are the signs? I mean, you know, like I'm dealing with my children. What are the signs there's something really needs to be approached and talked about, or we need to see someone?
Oh, there's in every area there's signs. Falling behind in school, social isolation, feeling depressed and lonely and does not want to talk to mom or dad, leaving activities abandoning activities that has been done in the past, sports, art, wanting to stay at home, don't want to be socializing with their friends or their peers, and there's a lot more to be talked about. If I talk about it, we need about the whole hour. There is clinical and non-clinical.
Sure. And when it comes to, you know, drug abuse, how do these kids get their hands on that stuff?
Oh, there's a lot of ways they can get their hands on it. First of all, there's, you know, peer pressure, and there is 101 ways they can get their hands on it. Through schools, through their peers, through their gatherings, and it's accessible, by the way.
Sure.
There's a lot of places that they can get it here from in the heart of Dearborn, in the heart of our community.
Is it coming through, you know, pharmacists, coming through? I mean, this stuff has to be prescribed.
Some is and some is not. It's being sold on the streets. Now with the education that's and the awareness that's been given across the country for professionals and non, I believe that, you know, whether a medical professional is well aware of, you know, how much to write and who to write it for and the duration of the medication, along with, you know, the pharmacist, when they're very alert, you know, who is taking it and who is not taking it and who is abusing it, and you know, it's being brought to everybody's attention at every level.
You know, I should have asked you this before. Why did you decide to get involved in this?
I'm a mother of five, and I hold a master's degree in public health, and my partner for CSS, who's a co-founder of the organization, is a pharmacist too. So a lot of cases that came to us, mothers, parents, that just took up the phone and called and said, okay, I don't know what to do. My son is doing so-and-so. I think I have a problem at home. I'm not sure who to reach out to, or if I go to the school, then it's going to, the school, if the school did not reach out to her first, then this is going to put my son or my daughter in the system. Please, some guidance. Please help us. Please, let's sit together. Can you connect me to a person that can help? So, doing this for so long with the community and being in the school system right now, we're implementing mental health and substance abuse curriculum along with a suicide evidence-based curriculum across maybe 10 or 11 schools as we speak right now, opened up the door for us to really provide the awareness to the students directly, and providing them with a list of resources that we can pile. We have partners in the community, physicians, organizations, therapists, social workers that are aware of what we're doing and what's happening in the school, and we're trying to build the close the loop. We provide the awareness, and every student has access to that list through the principal. In the event they need help, they can just, at the end of every session, please reach out to your principal or assistant principal, and they can give you the guidance and the list of resources you can take at home and share with mom and dad, or you can take the initiative and reach out to someone that can give you a hand or extend some services for you.
Wonderful. And what kind of reception are you getting from, you know, whether the parents or the children themselves?
It's a good reception, and we do know that almost with every session, every time we're in one of the schools, one student at least reaches out to the principal, at least for that matter, and asks, okay, I need help. Or our team consists of 5 social workers on master's level that I have at least minimum 5 to 10 years under their belt of experience in drug and substance abuse, and they're counselors as we speak in their day profession. So some of the children would reach out to the counselor, okay, can you help me? And then the counselor will guide them to the principal's office and to let them know that you need, you have assistance. There's a list of resources that you want to reach out to the principal, and we can go from there.
What kind of reception are you getting from the children themselves? Are they cooperating?
Oh, yeah. They do have the knowledge, although there is always more to do. Some don't have any knowledge, and some are too much knowledge.
Yeah.
But it's once you open up the dialogue and you open up in a way that it's, that, you know, that there's always techniques and there's always things to do with the children to connect with them.
Absolutely.
And at every level, yeah, on every grade level that we address, there's always something different to be done based on the age group that we work with, whether games, whether trivias, whether Q&A, whether any type of things, you know, that would get the conversation and stimulate the conversation with them.
Sounds good. I also like to remind listeners that nobody is immune from this. You know, this is across all different sects of the society and levels of the society. So,
absolutely.
You know, people shouldn't say, oh, it's not me. It's not. It could happen to everyone. And I think everyone should really pay attention to it. And then, you know, being a parent is a serious job, and we should take it seriously. Is there anything I haven't asked you you want to share with the community?
Yes, actually, in regards to the suicide prevention, we did almost 27 suicide trainings last year across the district for parents, for administrators, for social workers, and now we're going to launch again. And this is an evidence-based curriculum that teaches the mothers or anybody or the gatekeepers that attend the training on how to detect the early warning signs of suicide. Usually suicide is the end of the road. It's not the beginning. So and a problem has to be there before they get to that level.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be implementing this again in the schools for the students. We're probably going to be launching events throughout the summer and inviting parents, parents or anybody else in the community that would love or is interested in learning more, and they'll be handed a booklet to learn how to detect warning signs and how to look at issues with their kids from a different perspective and reach out for help. Help is it's place. Just let's overcome that stigma. If help is needed, pursue help before it's too late.
Absolutely. Do you want to leave a phone number or an app, a website or anything that people can refer to, how they can reach you?
Yes, absolutely. Our website is www.c-asist.org, and it has all the information and the contact information on the website.
Thank you so much, Nancy. I really appreciate your participation. We appreciate everything you're doing for our community, and we wish you best of luck in anything we can do. We're here to help.
Thank you, Khalil.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
The Rama Relief Foundation provides humanitarian aid into areas inside of war-torn Syria, as well as aid to the refugees who have fled to the neighboring countries in the Middle East. The foundation offers food baskets, container shipment, mental health, education, soup kitchens, and more. Go to ramarelief.org or call 248-990-4247. Any donation amount made to Rama will go to sustaining many lives. Call now 248-990-4247. When it comes to reproductive medicine, IVF Michigan Fertility Centers are the recognized leaders. With locations in Bloomfield Hills and 5 other cities in Michigan and Ohio, IVF has experts in all aspects of the field. As a founding member of IVF Michigan Fertility Centers, Dr. Nicholas Shama is one of the leading reproductive endocrinologists in Michigan and Ohio. Dr. Shama has performed over 10,000 IVF cases and has helped thousands of couples fulfill their dreams of parenthood. American board certified in both obstetrics Obstetrics and Gynecology and Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility, Dr. Nicholas Sciama is a very caring, compassionate, expert physician that understands not only the medical but also the emotional toil of infertility on his patients. When it's time, get personalized care from Dr. Nicholas Sciama at IVF Michigan Fertility Centers in Michigan and Ohio. Call toll-free 855-952-9600. 855-952-9600. Life is a nonprofit charity that's provided humanitarian aid and development to people and communities for over 25 years, regardless of race, color, religion, or cultural background. When disaster occurs here or around the world, Life for Relief and Development rushes in to provide food, medical aid, and shelter to those in need. Please help improve these efforts. Make your tax-deductible donation to Life now at lifeusa.org or call 248-424-7493.
Ziad brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
Welcome back and thank you for being with us. This is Khalil Hashim with the Local Connection. The number is 248-557-3300. We welcome your questions and your comments. We have been talking about the mental health and the opioid crisis in our community, specifically affecting youth. And with us, we're going to continue with the activist and pharmacist Ghada Abdullah and Ms. Deneen Charles from the Dearborn Schools. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Hashim. How are you?
Good. How are you? And thank you so much for being with us. We're going to start with Ghada. Could you please tell us a little bit about you and what you do in this regard?
Okay. So thanks, first of all, thanks for having me on your show.
Absolutely.
So I'm a pharmacist, and I'm an entrepreneur. I own pharmacies. And what I do is basically I got involved with activism before my cousin passed away from a drug overdose. But after he passed away, I kind of escalated my activities to be much more broader, and now I'm with the Detroit Wayne Mental Health Authority, which is the it's in charge of the Wayne County PIHP, which is a prepaid inpatient health plan. And what they do is they oversee all the mental health spending for the County of Wayne. And what I would like to, you know, get the message out is about the opioid epidemic. Sure. And what people need to do in case they go to the doctor and they get a prescription for a pain medication, what questions they need to ask, and all those types of things.
Wonderful, wonderful. Ms. Charles, thank you for being with us.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what you do and how do we work with our children.
Sure, thank you. Thank you so much for having me this
Absolutely.
Morning.
Absolutely.
I have been with the district for 22 years, and currently the past 3 years, I have been working with students in that affective domain. So anything that is social, emotional, anti-bullying, anything that has to do with health and wellness, those are the types of programs that I help monitor, along with some other things, specifically with this healthy living initiative that we have launched with Access. I call all of the organizations our premier power partners. It's Access, CSS, LAHC, along with SAFE.
Wonderful.
And we are really looking at educating students about substance abuse.
Absolutely. Ms. Abdullah, what should we ask the our doctors when it comes to prescribed medication?
So one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that we got into this opioid epidemic with people overdosing daily in the numbers of like 90 to 100 and people every single day dying, because a lot of people got addicted to their pain medication. And most people don't realize that they got started, like a lot of the people who are affected now, two-thirds of them got started by getting this pain medication from a friend or a family member who thought it was okay to share their pain medication. So when a prescription is written for you, and if you're not going to take it all and you're done with it, you need to dispose of it properly. Like, you need to throw it away in the proper place. And if not, and you leave it in your medicine cabinet, it's very important to keep it secure so nobody else gets a hold of it. Because sometimes your kids can take it and give it to their friends or neighbors or something like that. And that's how people get addicted to these medications, because they're very dangerous. The Detroit Wayne Mental Health Authority has set up these drug disposal boxes across the county, and they have it on their website. It's just DWMHA.com, and then you can click on the link for the maps.
Sure.
But when you do go to the doctor and you get a prescription pain medication, the first thing you want to ask the doctor, is this medication addictive? How am I going to stop this medication once I start it? And is there anything else that's a little bit safer in case what the doctor gave you is something that's addictive? And then if they write a prescription for 90 pills, you should ask them, do I really need 90 pills? Because what we're finding now is a study done by University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, found that most doctors are writing for 90 pills or more, when in fact the patient is only using 7 to 10 pills maximum. So what's happening to those other 80 pills? You know, so that's why this has become such a huge epidemic.
Absolutely. And once they get hooked, they want more and more, they want more.
Yeah, and it's so easy to become addicted. Like
exactly.
within a month of starting taking these medications, and if you take it repeatedly,
Absolutely.
You become addicted, yeah.
And don't, you know, again, a message to our listeners, don't think that you can handle it, you're strong. Once it's a chemical reaction, once it gets into your system, it's very difficult to really get rid of. You need professionals to help you with that. Ms. Charles,
yes.
How are we talking to our children, and is this an issue in our schools?
We are talking to the students. It is not a significant issue in the school, but Mr. Hashley, probably months before President Trump declared that opioid usage was a national epidemic, Dr. Maleko, the superintendent of Dearborn Public Schools, along with the board, already knew that there was something that we had to do to be proactive. We did not want to have those problems. So they asked us to come up with some type of systemic district-wide program that would help to educate students. So we did that. And we knew that one agency alone couldn't do it. We have 21,000 students, 34 schools. So we engaged the organizations in our community, Access, CSIS, LEHC, and SAFE. And without hesitation, they agreed to come with their curriculums, which are evidence-based, and make sure that students understand. And there were just three goals that we wanted to accomplish. Number one, to make sure that every student had at least one face-to-face with an educational facilitator about substance abuse. Number two, to provide at least one interactive assembly at the school in some form. And then, of course, number three, to educate our parents. And that would be in the form of some type of after-school assembly or meeting where parents could come together to ask questions. And they have done that. They have risen to the occasion and really came through in terms of helping students understand that they need to stay away from drugs. And I know that the pharmacist, she talked about the prescription drugs. That's definitely an issue, but they talk about alcohol. They talk about marijuana. They cover the entire gamut. And as my colleague said earlier, Nancy Berry, they know. They know more than we think they know. So we really have to break the silence, open.
They means the children, right?
The students,
They
even in elementary, they know about marijuana. They're asking questions. And I've been a part of some of those sessions. They go to the classroom, they talk to the entire class, and the students are talking. They don't feel threatened. They feel open to discuss some of these things, and that's what we want.
Absolutely.
The stigma, the barriers have to be broken down so that
Absolutely.
We can move forward and really confront the issues.
Yeah. I think you know, you bring in a very important point, which is we can't continue saying it's not me, it could happen to anyone. Ms. Abdullah, is there any discussions with doctors in our community not to prescribe that many medication?
Yes. So just some of my work has been involved in getting some of the organizations that I work with to do more training for doctors and pharmacists.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently, with the Wayne County Pharmacists Association, we did a Narcan training. Narcan is the drug that reverses an overdose. It's mm-hmm. a nasal spray now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what we've been doing is trying to promote that pharmacies need to carry this drug
mm-hmm.
and give it to people when they come into the pharmacy asking for it. So anyone, like you or me or anyone, could go up to a pharmacy and say, I need some Narcan. My brother, you could say, like, my friend or someone that I love has a problem with heroin or drugs or whatever, and I need to have this drug with me at all times so I can make sure that I can save my loved one. So the pharmacist should be able to say, okay, they take your name, and they give you the medication. You don't even have to tell them the person who is affected. And so it's private, but the problem is we're trying to get more pharmacies to jump on board with this protocol. Governor Snyder made this law effective last year. We have over 1,300 pharmacies now participating, but the challenge is to make sure that every single pharmacist who works at these pharmacies knows the protocol and knows how to do this under this new law. You know, because it's not something that you can pass the law saying every pharmacy can give Narcan out, but that doesn't translate into everybody knows how to do it right away.
Absolutely.
So we've been doing a lot of training on that, and now Wayne County Pharmacists is going to also be working with the Detroit Health Department and the Detroit Wayne Mental Health Authority in order to get more training out, more pharmacists on board, particularly in the city of Detroit. Because we do have a lack of uptake in the city of Detroit. But in the city of Dearborn, I believe that there's many pharmacies already participating.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I want to urge you to, Ms. Charles and you, to really keep us in mind, because, you know, we reach quite a bit of the youth at TMichigan.com, because we focus on young readers. Everything we do is cell phone driven. So anytime there are infos or, you know, just let us know. Ms. Charles, are you receiving the cooperation you need from the community?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The community has been by far most cooperative. I think they understand the urgency of what we're trying to be proactive. So, yes, all of the agencies, we received very good participation from them, and they're excited.
Yep.
They want to do more. We have plans even going into next year. So, yes, it's been a very rewarding experience so far. You know, it's a topic that we don't want to talk about, but together we're talking about it, and we're making it work.
I think we're having technical difficulties with Ms. Charles. Ms. Abdullah, is there anything I haven't asked you that you want, you would like to share with the community?
There are just a few more things.
Sure.
So I did talk about pain relief, and if you're in pain, what to do. So there are some alternatives that I'd like to mention that are not prescriptions or medicine, but if you're in pain and you're taking opioids, it's very safe to wean off of these slowly with the direction of your doctor, but you can also use yoga.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Acupuncture has been proven to help with pain, meditation, and a lot of people in Dearborn happen to be Muslim, and meditation is also prayer,
mm-hmm,
but
not
a quick prayer. It has to be really sustained and focused, you know?
Okay. This is something I wanted to explore, and we didn't get a chance to, which is the faith aspect, which is the spirituality, which seems to play, you know, many faith organizations throughout the country are tackling this issue. They're being successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that our faith community is cooperating with you as well in tackling
this issue. Absolutely. CSIS was one of the first organizations that came about after I went to the board at the Islamic Institute of Knowledge. And that was almost immediately after my cousin passed away. And Nancy jumped on board, and she was a force. And I was very happy to be working with Nancy. The Islamic Center of America on Ford Road also jumped up and is doing a lot of work in this regard now. And then the Islamic House of Wisdom with Sheikh Ilahi also, they have had some programs. But the challenge is all of the Islamic centers are still not equipped enough to deal with this problem.
Sure.
So what we're doing at the Detroit Wayne Mental Health Authority, we did have a proposal come up where there was a local organization, I believe it was LIFE, mm-hmm. that they said they were going to do some training for the imams.
Exactly.
And when I heard that, I said, wow, this is exactly what I've been saying for the past 2 years and exactly what we need. So, exactly. And I'm very much looking forward to that. Yes, and then the faith part is actually quite interesting that you mentioned that, because at the Islamic Center of America a couple weeks ago we had an addiction seminar,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and Imam Kazaruni actually spoke briefly, but his words were so profound.
Yeah.
And what he did was he did some research, and he went back to the 9th century and found some texts, some medical textbooks, and found that the same problem that we're having today where doctors are splitting up the person's physical and mental health, so they're treating those things separately, that same problem existed back then as it does today.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because I don't know if people are
aware. By the
way,
he was supposed to be with us on the show this morning. And we have had some difficulties. We couldn't reach him.
Yeah, but the challenge has been there for a long time, and unfortunately, we're finding new ways to deal with it and trying to integrate physical health and mental health.
Sounds good. How can people reach you?
To reach me, if you'd like to go through the Detroit Wayne Mental Health Authority, would be the best way, because I personally cannot help people when they're in this problem. So the best thing to do is to go through the 800 number, and that's 1-800-241-4949. That's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And can I repeat it one more time?
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's 1-800-241-4949. That's a 24-hour-a-day line. You can call, and you'll be connected to a counselor who will link you up to the right provider, depending on what needs you have.
Sounds good. Mm-hmm. We thank you so much for being with us this morning, and we thank Ms. Charles. I'm not sure if she's still with us. We've had some difficulties reaching her, and you need to take care of those kids. Thank you so much, Ms. Abdullah, and thank you, Ms. Charles, for being with us this morning. And we thank you for everything that you're doing in this community.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Please stay tuned. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
LIFE is a nonprofit charity that's provided humanitarian aid and development to people and communities for over 25 years, regardless of race, color, religion, or cultural background. When disaster occurs here or around the world, LIFE for Relief and Development rushes in to provide food, medical aid, and shelter to those in need. Please help improve these efforts. Make your tax-deductible donation to LIFE now at lifeusa.org or call 248-424-7493.
Are you going to start a restaurant or a grocery store soon? Do you need floor plans and designs? Call Najee Abood at 734-744-9796. Do you want to buy kitchen and restaurant equipment at discount prices? Call Najee Abood now, 734-744-9796. New Concept Products and Design, the trademark of kitchen equipment. 5% discount on all purchases of $75,000 or more. New Concept Products and Design, new location, 31185 Schoolcraft in Livonia. Learn more at www.newconceptproducts.com. Call Najee Abood, 734-744-9796.
أصوات زمزم الواقع على 24065 أرشد لك في مدينة فاركمنتون هيلز ترحب بالجالية العربية والكلدانية تنزيلات كبيرة على عموم المواد الغذائية في يوم الأربعاء من كل أسبوع لا تنسوا فريش كاري أوت جميع أنواع المعجنات وأيضا صواني الكامبو المشكلة والصمون الحار لحوم حلال الجالية العربية والإسلامية الملحمة بإدارة قصاب الجالية المعروف سلوان جربوع زوروهم على 24065 أرشد لك في مدينة فارمينغتون هيلز أو اتصلوا بهم على 248-476-0300 أسواق زمزم للمذاق عنوان لجميع طلباتكم اتصلوا على 248-476-0300 أسواق زمزم للمعاملة الراقية وكرم الضيافة عنوان
When you're looking for the best in optical care, Dr. Imad Nakash is your doctor to see. With years of experience and thousands of successful procedures performed, you can trust your eyes to Dr. Imad Nakash. See Dr. Imad Nakash and his professional staff for your eye care needs. There's two locations to serve you. In Hazel Park, call 248-336-3937. 248-336-3937. In Rochester Hills, call 248-299-3937. That's 248-299-3937.
Welcome back and thank you for being with us this morning. This is Khalil Hashem with the Local Connection on US Arab Radio and EMMichigan.com. We have been talking to various experts in regard to the opioid crisis and to mental health issues. And if Ms. Charles is listening to us, we want to thank you for being with us. The Dearborn Schools has been wonderful trying to deal with this issue, and Dr. Maliko has been really taking a great lead in providing great services in our community, and we thank both of them, and we thank you, Ms. Charles, for being with us this morning. And if we got about 5 minutes, Ms. Charles, if there's anything we have not asked you and you'd like to share with us, you know, please give us a call back, and you know, from now till 8:40, we really appreciate your participation. Again, this is a huge issue. This affects our children. You know, again, I'm going to repeat that. You cannot say it's me. You know, you cannot. It's me. It doesn't happen to me. I'm sorry. Who do we have on? Jerry. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Mr. Khalil Hashem. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. You know, Mr. Khalil Hashem.
Very quickly, Jerry. We're running out of time. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. What I try to say, your topic is very important to save our youth, our children. I was trying to address question to him, Mr. Khalil Hashem,
okay,
but
go ahead,
I know
please.
They left. The question is, shouldn't be some kind of a connection team between the doctors who prescribe the prescription and the pharmacy.
Mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
means when the pharmacy sees so many prescriptions coming from this particular doctor, that should raise red flag.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what I was trying
absolutely,
to say.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you for taking
thank
my
you,
call,
absolutely,
Mr. Khalil
absolutely.
Hashem, and happy Easter.
Same to you. And to the entire community, happy Easter to everyone. I think Jerry brings up a very important question, which is that coordination needs to be there. I don't know from a legal point of view, from a business point of view, if they can do that, but some kind of mechanism needs to really be established to really handle this issue, you know, some kind of awareness. Do we have someone on call?
Dr. Sawan.
Good morning, Dr. Sawan.
Good morning, Khalil. How are you?
Good. How are you? And thank you so much for being with us.
It's very interesting subject.
It is. It is. I know you care, so this is will be very interesting to you. And as a doctor, is this an issue among doctors? Do you guys discuss it?
Of course, Khalil. As a matter of fact, you know, like, narcotics are not supposed actually to be prescribed without regulation. This is extremely important, you know. You know that I'm working in a pain clinic,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
you know, pain clinics usually prescribe narcotics for acute and chronic pain, but this is supposed to be regulated. I mean, prescription medications are supposed to be taken by the patient himself. This is extremely important. If a patient will be prescribed narcotics, he is supposed to sign narcotic agreement. So the narcotic agreement is not only that the patient should sign, you know, like a physician is supposed to go over the narcotic agreement with the patient and explaining that narcotics are supposed to be taken by the patient himself. You know, like, for example, the patient cannot actually, you know, like, give his wife or kids or, you know, neighbor or whatever. Like, if somebody else is having pain, you know, you cannot medicate other people, you know, with narcotics. This is very important. And also, the patient is supposed to take the medications as scheduled and when needed. So, it is very important that the patient should not overuse the medications and should not run out of the medications early. Like, some patients would come running out of the medications like 2 days before the time of the refill, or maybe 1 week or 2 weeks. It means that, you know, they have been overusing the medications and abusing the medications, or maybe, you know, like giving the medications to somebody else, or, you know, maybe, you know, selling them or something like that. So this is something very important that the physician should know about and should monitor.
You know, most people don't know how serious this is. You know, they think, just like alcohol, you know, they think, oh, I can handle it, and I can handle a beer or two or three or four. And it's the same thing. I mean, people get hooked very easily. It doesn't matter how strong you are. It doesn't matter who you are. The potential of being addicted. And as you mentioned, you know, for this medication to be in the wrong hand is great.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, like, prescription drugs are effective and safe if used properly. But if abused, they are very harmful and addictive as well. I mean, you know, like, how many times, you know, we have patients coming saying, oh, the dog ate my medication, it fell in the toilet, somebody stole it. And, you know, if there is, like, any, accident of stealing or something like that, the police should be involved, and a police report should be done, because, you know, like, it is very important to know who stole the medication, if they were stolen to start with. You know what I mean?
Because absolutely.
Remember that those people who are addicted to medications, you know, they are like, you know, they have excuses, and those excuses will never end. So,
absolutely.
You know, a physician should be smart enough to know who is using the medications and who is abusing the medication. This is extremely important. And, you know, like, the patient should be using only one pharmacy. You know, you cannot, like, you know, fill the medication today from this pharmacy and then go to another state and fill the medication from another pharmacy, or, you know, like, even if in the same state, but, you know, going to another pharmacy. So pharmacies do not know about, you know, like, each other. And you should be prescribed medications only from one physician. You cannot actually have a medication today from Dr. A and then, you know, run to Dr. B to get, you know, like, different medication. You know, when it comes to pain medication,
sure,
this is extremely important.
Yep.
And, you know, we as physicians, we have something called the drug monitoring, mm-hmm, you know, site, where we will be able to find who was prescribing medications for this patient for the last 2 years. So, I mean, if I have, you know, if I'm suspecting somebody, I can go to this site, of course, with a proper user ID and password, and I will be able to find out who prescribed, you know, narcotics for this patient other than me.
Absolutely.
And if it is only me, I would know. But, you know, if the patient is, like, drug shopping and going from one place to another, you know, like, to take, you know, narcotics, I would know about it. And in this case, I have to do the proper action. So usually in pain clinics, what they will be doing, if they will find that, you know, a patient is taking medications from another physician, you know, we will be able to terminate the patient with 30 days notice, and the patient can go to another pain clinic. And they may also do the same type of investigations that we're doing, and they are supposed to know that the patient, you know, is taking medications only from them or from other people.
Sounds good.
And, let me
hold off on this thought. We're going to continue it in a second, Dr. Sawan. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
أصوات زمزم الواقع على 24065 أرشد لك في مدينة فاركمينغتون هيلز ترحب بالجالية العربية والكلدانية. تنزيلات كبيرة على عموم المواد الغذائية في يوم الأربعاء من كل أسبوع. لا تنسوا فريش كاري اوت، جميع انواع المعجنات، وايضا صواني الكامبو المشكله والصمون الحار، لحوم حلال الجاليه العربيه والاسلاميه الملحمه باداره قصاب الجاليه المعروف سلوان جربوع. زوروهم على 24065 اورشد لك في مدينه فارمينغتون هيلز، او اتصلوا بهم على 248-476-0300. اسواق زمزم للمذاق عنوان، لجميع طلباتكم اتصلوا على 248-476-0300. اسواق زمزم للمعامله الراقيه وكرم الضيافه عنوان.
The Rama Relief Foundation provides humanitarian aid into areas inside of war-torn Syria, as well as aid to the refugees who have fled to the neighboring countries in the Middle East. The foundation offers food baskets, container shipment, mental health, education, soup kitchens, and more. Go to ramarelief.org or call 248-990-4247. Any donation amount made to Rama will go to sustaining many lives. Call now 248-990-4247.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
قشات ميديترينيان ماركت بإدارة سهر قشات وأولاده يرحبون بالجالية العربية والكلدانية، جميع أنواع المواد الغذائية، ألبان طازجة، الكرزات والبهارات الطازجة. داخل الأسواق مطعم ميديترينيان شيش كباب يقدم يوميا جميع أنواع الكباب، المقبلات العربية العراقية وصواني الكامبو المميزة. تفتح الأسواق من 8 إلى 9 مساء من الاثنين وحتى السبت، ومن 8 صباحا إلى 9 مساء يوم الأحد. تقع الأسواق على 2839 نورث وسترن هايوي في مدينة فارمينغتون هيلز. لحم حلال للجالية الإسلامية، لطلباتكم من المطعم كول 248-538-7855. That is 248-538-7855. قشة ميديترينيان ماركت، خدمة متميزة ومعاملة راقية.
Welcome back and thank you for being with us. We're going to continue with Dr. Sawan. Dr. Sawan, you mentioned something very important to this conversation, which is the responsibility of the doctor and the responsibility of the patient. And I think I remember a doctor I went to for when I had an operation on my mouth, and he said to me, here are 4 pills, only 4, you need to be careful with, take them only if you need to, these are very serious medication. And I didn't take him because I really didn't need to, but I really appreciated his diligence in trying to explain to me what I'm dealing with. Some doctors don't do that. How can we change that?
This is very important. I mean, it is the responsibility of the physician to explain to the patient how serious those medications are. Mm-hmm. This mm-hmm. is very important because they are very addictive. And, it is important also to make sure that the patient, if he is on those medications and he needs the medications, that they are using them. They are not giving them to somebody else. And that's why, we do something in pain clinics called the drug screen. So with the drug screen, we will be, examining the patient to make sure that he is taking the drug. And this could be through urine or blood testing to make sure that the drug that I'm prescribing is taken by the patient. And for example, if I'm prescribing narcotics and in the drug screen I do not see narcotics, so where did they go? And also I want to make sure that the patient is not abusing, other recreational drugs. You know what I mean? So
sure.
For example, if I am, prescribing narcotics and then, I am seeing other stuff in the, in the drug screening exam, I will see, for example, cocaine or whatever. So in this case, the patient is considered, a drug abuser, and, we have to make sure that, we know about it, and we should tell the patients that, we are not supposed to prescribe, medications if they are abusing drugs. So, this is very important, and we should do the proper action and transfer patients, you know, to detox, facilities. So it is very important. I think that, you know, we, the physicians, we are responsible for the abuse of prescription medications by over-prescribing them.
And by
not explaining to patients, you know, how serious is the problem, and not sharing with patients that those medications are dangerous and they should be used properly. So it is important also not to, you know, like to give patients early refills. Like, for example, if I'm giving patients, at 1 to 2 for 30 days, I shouldn't be, you know, prescribing this medication in 2 weeks just because the patient ran out of it. And at the same time, the patient should not be running out of the medication over a week and where they will be going to the emergency room to take more medications. And as, you know, somebody said, you know, just, you know, I was listening to your program and the pharmacist said, you know, don't prescribe 90 pills for the patient. If the patient doesn't need 90 pills, do not prescribe 90 pills. Prescribe less. And, you know, the patient is supposed to take the medications when needed only.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah, this
why do they do that? Do you know?
To prescribe so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, to tell you the truth, you know, I mean, some of our chronic pain patients, they are like, you know, presenting with severe chronic pain and, you know, that they need the medications and they cannot function without the medications. But to tell you the truth, you know, although I am working in a pain clinic, you know, I usually try not to prescribe the 90 pills, and I usually try to prescribe a way less than that. And I try to tell patients that, you know, although I'm prescribing this amount, but our goal is to reduce the pain medication and, you know, like to taper it off. Remember, this is very important. You know, like with pain medications, we cannot, you know, stop pain medications, you know, abruptly because it will cause withdrawal symptoms. And, you know, it may be very dangerous, you know, just like, you know, to cut the pain
medication. Dr. Sloan, is there anybody who monitors what doctors do?
You know, I think doctors themselves should monitor themselves.
Yeah, but there's no way to monitor them, you know. Like,
you know, I think, you know, like pharmacies, you know, like, for example, if I'm prescribing, you know, a way more, you know, the pharmacy will call me. Or, for example, if the patient is taking, you know, medications from somebody else, the pharmacy will call me and let me know that the patient is taking, you know, another pain medication, you know, from somebody else.
So basically it is up to the doctors and the pharmacies to be responsible. Really, we don't have a system to monitor that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like the system we have, you know, the drug monitoring, you know, like website that we go to see, you know, if the patient is taking, you know, medications from somebody else. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I feel that a physician should monitor himself to start with. And, you know, like, also nobody wants to be in a situation where they are, like, you know, prescribing, you know, medications for abusers because, you know, like, so many, you know, like, I will not say so many, but, you know, there are cases where, you know, physicians were suspended and their license, was suspended because of, you know, like, over-prescribing, you know. In my opinion, the whole situation doesn't work it. You know, I am dead sure that there are, you know, like, facilities who can monitor that. So if it is known or, you know, it came to the attention of the authorities that this physician is, like, prescribing medications for abusers or whatever, I'm sure that, you know, something should happen about it. Because I did, you know, like, it never happened to me, but I heard about physicians who had license suspended because of, you know, over-prescribing pain medication. So I am dead sure that there is something, you know, happening for physicians who are, you know, over-prescribing pain medication.
Absolutely.
I would like to tell you that opioids, they are not the only prescription medications that could be abused, because there is also stimulants like amphetamines and Adderall.
Yeah.
And there is also two in each depression.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, like, there are so many other, you know, like, medications that could be abused. So I would say it's a spectrum of medications. And it is very important, you know, like, to watch for our kids, because I would say that schools, they are like, you know, I would say the biggest player when it comes, you know, to drug abuse, because unfortunately, you know,
absolutely.
Like, when my kids were at school, you know, my daughters, you know, used to tell me, oh, yeah, the Adderall is available. I mean, you know, you can buy, you know, a pill for, you know, $10. And I was just like, you know, inquiring where those kids are getting those medications from.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It is really, you know, very sad that, you know, those medications could be available for kids, you know, like in high school and junior high and, you know, and
Absolutely. It is you know, an issue that requires everyone to work together. And I just want to thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Sawan, and for shedding light on a very important issue, which is the responsibility of the physician and the responsibility of the pharmacy, specifically the physician
and
the patient. And the patient themselves. Yeah.
I mean, this is very important.
Yeah.
I mean,
and,
you know,
and thank
parenting is a very important
job, and we have
actually to monitor our children
as
well.
Thank you so much, and you have a wonderful, wonderful holiday and a wonderful weekend. Thanks again for being with us.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. And I want to thank all of our guests, Ms. Abdullah, Ghada Abdullah, Ms. Nancy Berry, and Ms. Deneen Charles, and Dr. Sawan, and for Jerry for calling this morning to be on the show as well. This is a very great, important topic to everyone, whether you have children or not. It's a very important topic. Before I let you go, I just also want to remind you that, you know, the housing market is heating up tremendously. If you have a home that you've been wanting to sell, and you're itching to sell, and you've been wanting to sell, this is the time. Specifically, if you bought this home when the prices were very low, I think you're sitting on a gold mine. You're sitting on a pile of cash. This is the time to cash in. Give me a call, 313-819-0101, and I'll be more than happy to work with you on that. And or if you're looking for a home, this is really a good time to buy as well before the you know, June comes in, when we're expecting prices to be very high. So whether you're buying or selling, specifically if you're selling, because I have several buyers who are qualified and ready to buy, we can't find homes for them. So if you have a home to sell and you're ready to make that change or that move, give me a call, 313-819-0101. I want to thank you so much for being with us today, whether, you know, you were with us on the segment talking about the opioid crisis or other discussions as well. Thank you for listening. And if you need any help with real estate aspects, give me a call, 313-819-0101. Thank you. Have a wonderful holiday. Happy Easter to everyone.